Vakasha Lori.
Hi, everybody. I actually want to start tonight with a story, which I think helps bring out, helps illuminate a few different points that we're going to kind of see in the sources, coming out of the sources tonight, really 2 points. And it's about my son's bar mitzvah. My oldest son is now 19, so before his bar mitzvah, I had this idea, and the idea was that we live in Israel, we'd bring in from America my great grandfather's talis, which we still had in the family, because my great great grandfather was a talis maker in Galicia. So my great great grandfather was a talis maker, and his son received one of the talisim that he made. Now, I don't want to make this sound like it was too unique. In the town that my family comes from, Kalamea, there was a factory of sorts for making talisim, and it was under the supervision of members of the family of Rav Yontav Lipman Heller. So, you know, it was a talises went out from this factory to all over Europe. So there was this talis was left in the family somehow that my great great grandfather had made for my great grandfather, and I had the idea that we would ask someone to bring it in for my son's bar mitzvah. So, you know, it sounded like a great plan. And then the talis comes a couple days before the bar mitzvah, I guess you could say accompanied by, or maybe it accompanied my father. And we take a look at it. And it wasn't quite what we expected. It was substantially smaller than the proper word is talitot, but it was substantially smaller than a talis than any self-respecting talis that you'd see in a shul today. By substantially smaller, I mean the garment, the fabric part was maybe half the size of a talis. It wasn't one of these, like, you know, shawl talises. It was a rectangle, but it was about half the size of the kind of talis that you really see used more frequently today. And the strings, the tzitzit on the talit, were very short. And it was surprisingly so. They were much shorter than we had expected. And to the point that we felt that we needed to bring this talis actually to a Rav to clarify if our son could use it for his bar mitzvah. So all's well that ends well. The Rav said, yeah, it's fine. And my son, thank God, was able to wear it in his bar mitzvah, and it was very meaningful for everybody involved. And yet, there are a few things about the story that are kind of interesting, right? I mean, this was, yes, it does sound that I'm seeing the chat, which I'm supposed to only look at chats at the end because they're going to distract me, though I appreciate the chat comment, which is, please feel free to keep them coming in. It's my job to keep focused. One thing that was really interesting was just that, you know, this was, like I said, it was a talis factory. It wasn't just that my great-great-grandfather was a private talis maker. They were making lots of talitot here and shipping them all over Europe. So the standard size of the talis appears to have greatly increased in not that many years. We're talking, I don't know, 100 years, more than 100 years, I guess, but not more than 150 years. And the strings as well, which is of course more significant, that the strings should be so much shorter, was also quite surprising. And so one thing that was interesting was that what would have been not that long ago someone asked, they weren't yekim, and I don't think it was made for a child. It was made for at least the family stories that was made for the bar mitzvah. So I could be wrong. I did not officially study this. I don't know all of the facts. But the first point I'm trying to make is that you have this interesting thing where a garment that would have been intuitively accepted in a wide variety of communities nowadays, you know, came into our hands and it was called into question. There's a relationship that's a little different to it, or, you know, Dr. Chaim Soloveitchik in his essay, Rupture and Reconstruction, talks about how At one stage, the talis was just, or the talit katan, tzitzit, was just sort of like a garment that you put on like a pair of socks for a lot of people. And over time, it's been treated in a more ritualized fashion. So one thing is that there's something interesting that potentially changes in terms of what we expect the talit to be and how we're relating to it. That it's not just a matter of course that, okay, this is what, you know, this is what, you know, my great-great-grandfather made. We all know it's fine. But on the level that there's actually a question now if it's kasher, and it's quite clear to us we would never have purchased it, say, new, if it were in those dimensions. And there's a second interesting aspect of the story, of course, which is that there would have been no thought that I would have been doing anything with that talis when I turned 12, or as I was older, or at my son's bar mitzvah, right? The connection that I experienced to a talis in my son's bar mitzvah was him putting it on. It's my great-great-grandfather. It's my, as it were, family mesorah in some sense, right? Wrapped up in an object. But it wasn't an object that there was any thought that I would directly experience. It's never even come up. That's also interesting. That it seems is at first would be an attitude that we would expect would have been the same throughout history. I think actually what we're going to see is that that might have been different at different points of the of how halacha, of the development of halacha, than we might have thought. So what I want to do, we're going to start looking at the sources. And what I'm going to ask you to do is we kind of know how this story ends, though I don't know if the story is quite as over as we might think. So we'll see. But I want you to come at the sources with a fresh mind to look and see what they have to say. It might not hurt before we start for people here to take a moment also to just think for a minute about what your personal associations are with a woman in a talit. Picture it. Try to picture a woman wearing a talit and think, like, what do you see in that picture? And also, like, how does it make you feel? Because I think that's also a little bit relevant to the discussion, because in my experience, the reaction to that picture is very visceral. And that's also something that actually I think our sources are going to touch on very, very closely tonight. Okay, so without further ado, let's see if I can successfully share this source sheet. I hope so. And dun-dun-dun. Yes, okay, first try, that's so exciting. What I'm going to ask you to do, I have English translations here also, though I would recommend following along with me in the Hebrew. I'm going to be translating out loud in any case. Also, what I wanna recommend for people now that this screen is shared, if you set on the top right corner, you can set to speaker view, in which case you'll still see me in the top right corner, or you can also set into side-by-side mode, in which case you'll have a bigger picture. And I think that makes the share a little more interesting. Okay, let's get started. And of course, the place to get started in terms of tzitzit is the psukim in the Torah. It's a nice segue actually from last week, right? Because last week we talked about mentioning the parsha of tzitzit. Another interesting aside, Rav Ezra Bick, with whom I work on derachah.org, which is a project for which I've researched a lot of these issues that we're going to be talking about in this class, he asked me when we wrote the piece on Kriyat Shema, do you want to talk about how weird it must be for women to recite a paragraph on a regular basis about a mitzvah that they don't perform, meaning Vayomer and Kriyat Shema? And what was so interesting was, and I raised this with the staff, also the rest of my colleagues also, is that none of the women on the team felt that as being unusual. It's taken as such a matter of course that we say Vayomer on a regular basis that we don't even think of it as, oh, here I am celebrating a mitzvah that I'm not performing on a regular basis. I think there's a sense almost of feeling like the closest we come to performing it perhaps is expressing. I'm not saying that no one ever has that thought, but it was just interesting that wasn't the primary thought. Perhaps another reason is because tzitzit is not just the mitzvah of tzitzit in the parsha of tzitzit, but within the parsha of tzitzit, there's also discussions of there's other things that come up, right? So we have God speaking, HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaking to Moshe Rabbeinu, and he says, "Daber el bnei Yisrael, v'marta lehem v'asulem tzitzit." Okay, say to them, make yourself tzitzit. Now tzitzit, of course, we have to be careful here. Tzitzit does not mean a garment, right? Tzitzit means fringes. He says to make them fringes. Al kanfei bigdehem. And the fringes have to go on the corners of their garments, lidorotam. Now, kanfei bigdehem is also interesting because it's from here that we're going to learn that they have to have corners, right? We're going to do a quick review of the basics of tzitzit, right? To have tzitzit, a garment needs to have corners. This is going to be forever. Right, and you're going to put these on. You're going to put these this fringe on the corner with a thread of blue. That's tchelet, which is according to many has been rediscovered, so that there's an extra ability. There's an ability to have an extra fulfillment or a more complete fulfillment of the mitzvah. This is going to be very important for us. You have to be able to see the tzitzit. And why do you have to see the tzitzit? Seeing them, it's almost like, it sounds at first glance, kind of like, you know, putting a string around your finger, right? It's a memory device. You have the thing tied on your garment and it's like a reminder string, right? Before you have the cell phone alarm, you have the reminder string. And that reminder string reminds you of Sfartem et kol mitzvot Hashem, all the mitzvot of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, vasitem otam, and you'll do them. And now we have actually something that could stand its own as a mitzvah, on its own as a mitzvah. V'lo taturu achrei levavchem v'achrei nechem asher etem zonim achreihem. And this is going to keep you focused so that your eyes not stray, and so that you don't stray after your heart, after your eyes. And this is going to help you remember the mitzvot and remain holy. Now, this discussion, if we're open about just a read, there's nothing here that really sounds particularly gendered. Right? We're told that the goal here is not to stray. The goal here is to remember God and his mitzvot and to perform mitzvot and to be sacred. And these are all, of course, things that Jewish women do no less than Jewish men. One could make the claim that men have greater trouble with straying. That's a very large claim to make, that I wouldn't personally be comfortable saying that is the long and short of a gender difference here. One thing that we might have thought would be relevant, and we'll talk about this a little bit later, is the phrase Daber el Bnei Yisrael. Sometimes in Midrashim, the term Bnei Yisrael is taken as excluding Benot Yisrael, the sons of Israel, right? Bnei can mean children of Israel, and B'nai can mean sons of Israel. So sometimes B'nai is taken to exclude B'not when there's a tradition in that direction. But other than the possibility of that, there's nothing clear here that says tzitzit is for men or tzitzit is exclusive to men. There's another pasuk that comes from Devarim. Dilim ta'aseh lecha al arba knafok tzitcha asher tachaseh ba. That you have to make these twisted cords on the corners of your garments. So now we find out they have to be definitely a four-cornered garment with which you cover yourself. It's also important here, kisuticha, tzitzit are supposed to be yours, not borrowed. Okay? And it's specifically on a four-cornered garment. So the question then becomes, well, what's the relationship to tzitzit? Or in classic halachic terms, is this a mitzvah on the cheftza or on the gavra? Is this a mitzvah that's about an object or that's a personal obligation? Does a man or does anyone, we haven't really seen anything man specific, have to have tzitzit on, you know, all the time? Is there an obligation to always have tzitzit? Or is the obligation relative to a particular garment? That if I have a garment on that has four corners, then perhaps I am obligated in tzitzit. Okay, and there's a lot of comments in Chazal that just go on and on about how significant this mitzvah is. Rashi, the tzitzit, I'm sorry, I skipped, I wanted to see Marin Menachot. It says, you're going to remember all the mitzvot of Hashem. Shkula mitzvah zo keneged kol mitzvot kulam. This mitzvah is as much as all the other mitzvahs. We have a few mitzvahs that sometimes get this kind of attention, but it's major. And Rashi explains that actually, if you add up the gematria of tzitzit with the number of knots in tzitzit, you're going to get to 613. So tzitzit are suddenly representing the entirety of Torah and mitzvot. Hayah Rabbi Meir Omer, Manish tenat chelet mikol minei tivonim, why daf chelet, mipnei shatchelet doma layam. The Yam Domala Rakia, Rakia Lakisea Kavod. Another beautiful idea. You look at the tzitzit, and if the tzitzit actually have tchelet in them, then that's going to connect you. It's going to bring you from the sea to the heavens, from the wonders of this world to the wonders of the world beyond, to Kadosh Baruch Hu's Kisea Kavod. Again, all of this sounds beautiful, and it sounds like it should be for everybody. Rashbi, Rav Shimon Bar Yochai says, Kol Azariz B'mitzvah Zo. If you're careful with the mitzvah of tzitzit, you get to receive the face of the Shechina. So the question is going to become, why aren't women invited to this party? And it's not just a party. We just said that this is something that's considered equivalent to all the mitzvahs in the Torah. It's a way to have a constant reminder of God. It connects us to the heavens. It connects us to the Shechina. Putting all the politics and all the baggage aside, it would be hard to see how someone who loves Torah mitzvot would not want to fulfill this mitzvah. It's beautiful. A few more details about the mitzvah. If you've got a turban or mitachat, it's not eligible for the mitzvah. Because it's really more for the head. And when we talk about chasut echad, it's supposed to be for the whole body. Back to Chefza versus Gavra. Im ein adam lovesh talit bat arba knafot, eino chayav betzitzit. You don't have an obligation to have tzitzit if you're not wearing the garment. V'tov v'nachon liyot kol adam zahir lovesh talit katan kol hayom, kedei sheyizkor hamitzvah b'chol rega. The tzitzit garment, what we call tzitzit informally, the talit katan, it's not obligatory the way people tend to think it is. And why do you wear the talit katan? You wear the talit katan to make sure that you're actually fulfilling the mitzvah of tzitzit. But if you didn't wear the talit katan and you were living nowadays when we're not walking around in ponchos all the time, at least not most of us, right? You're wearing your dress shirts, which aren't four-cornered garments, or your t-shirts, which are certainly not cornered garments, right? So in that kind of a situation, there's nothing to do. You don't have to wear tzitzit. But our orientation towards the mitzvah is that this is the right thing to do. This comes from a Gemara Menachot. It says, Nihi t'chayve rachmana ki mechzi talit debat chiyuva. Given that Hashem says it's obligatory when you're wearing a garment for which the tzitzit are necessary. Ki mechzi talit delav bat chiyuva hi mi chayve rachmana. So, you know, why should you bother with it if not? But here's what, and this is a story of a malach who talks to Rav Katina. He says to him, titztiki means trying to find any kind of excuse or any kind of way out. Titztiki l'niftar nafshach mitzitzit. You're trying to find an excuse to find a way out of tzitzit. That was bad. This is a Gemara that's talking about why Rav Katina, the ways in which Rav Katina erred or sinned. And Rav Katina erred and sinned because he found excuses not to wear it. So we have this funny dynamic where really, technically, on a halachic level, it's not a mitzvah on the individual to wear tzitzit. It's a mitzvah when the person is wearing a four-cornered garment. But that being said, it's not something we want to get out of. The orientation is to pursue it. Okay. Now, where does this leave us? And where does this leave us with women? So let's start by looking at the exemption. Shulchan Aruch, the Mechaber, summarizes the exemption this way. Tzitzit, Shasa'an, Eino Yudi. Oh, I'm sorry, doesn't summarize it this way. One stop, back to Daber al Bnei Yisrael, V'la Bnot Yisrael. Maybe that would be the source of an exemption. Tzitzit, Shasa'an, Eino Yudi, Pasul. Dichtiv daber al bnei Yisrael, lapuke eino yudi, vayishak shera la sotan. I want to show you that the Shulchan Aruch, I'm going to explain this in a second, the Shulchan Aruch does not say daber al bnei Yisrael excludes bnei Yisrael. He doesn't say that. How do we know that? The Mechaber in Shulchan Aruch says, we learn from daber al bnei Yisrael that we exclude the non-Jew from making tzitzit. But the Jewish woman could make tzitzit. Now, halacha l'maisa, whether or not the Jewish woman could make tzitzit is a separate issue. But what I'm showing you here is that my first guess, if I were going to try to find something gendered in the verses, would be to say, daber al b'nei Yisrael, v'lav b'not Yisrael, that the issue is that it says b'nei Yisrael and not b'not. But we have here, for example, a clear statement that the b'nei Yisrael, even if it's coming to include somebody, is not coming to exclude women. I'm going to ask, someone has their mic on. I'm going to ask them to mute it, unless it's an urgent question. Okay. And but what is interesting is that the Magen Avram does try to say that. The Magen Avram tries to say that a woman, in fact, should not be a person to string the tzitzit because b'nei Yisrael v'lav b'not Yisrael. What's interesting is he does not bring this, and we don't see in, as far as I know, there's nowhere in halachic literature, at least not in early halachic literature, there's no indication that in the case of tzitzit, this is a difference between b'nei and b'not Yisrael. The closest that we come is a drasha like here in the name of Magen Avraham talking about making tzitzit, not even wearing tzitzit. But this is not really the way that the pasuk is darshened out. So how do we get to the exemption? Okay, finally, let's get down to business. And this requires us to look at the Sifrei in B'midbar. So the Sifrei in B'midbar says, V'yomer Hashem al Moshe lemur. That's the beginning of Parshat Vayomer. Af hanashim b'mashma. The first opinion in the Sifrei is women have an obligation in tzitzit. That's the first opinion. Rabbi Shimon poter tanashim min tzitzit. Second opinion is to exempt women from tzitzit. Why? Mipi shemitzvat aseh shezman grama nashim p'turot. Okay? Why? He says it's a positive time-bound commandment. Now, from the verses, was it clear that this was a positive time-bound commandment? The way that we've been describing things, it sounded like the mitzvah of tzitzit was something that depended on the garment that one was wearing, not on time. And yet, here Rav Shimon is saying that it's a positive time-bound commandment. We're going to have to understand why that should be the case. And there's a third view, which is really building on Rav Shimon's view, but it's actually in its own way fascinating for our purposes. Rav Yehuda ben Baba Omer, B'yichud batlu chachamim et haredid shel ha'isha min hatzitzit. Our sages specifically excluded a woman's veil, like, you know, her overall cloak, the thing over her head that would hang down from tzitzit. The lochivu betalit, ela mipnei shepamim shebala mitkaseba. And the only reason they said that she has to have tzitzit on her four-cornered cloak, back to when the women were wearing ponchos, or the, you know, Middle Eastern equivalent, was because sometimes her husband would wear those four-cornered cloaks. They'd share the jacket, as it were. Again, Rabbi Yehuda ben Baba says, it's pretty clear that he's assuming women are exempt from the mitzvah of tzitzit. It seems that he's embracing the opinion of Rabbi Shimon, that somehow this is a positive time-bound commandment, and therefore women are exempt. However, he's saying, he's seriously considering, do women need to have tzitzit on their garments when they're four-cornered garments? And there are two garments he has in mind, the radid, which starts on the head but goes over the body as well, which potentially would need to have tzitzit on if women were obligated in the mitzvah, and the four-cornered cloak. And what he says is, women only are, and he uses the language obligated. Women are only obligated. Lo chivu b'talit ela. They only obligate in the case of talit in tzitzit, mipnei shepamim shebala mitkaseba, because sometimes their husbands would share them. So he's painting a picture for us whereby a woman was exempt. See, disagrees with Tana Kama, and he agrees with Rabbi Shimon. A woman was exempt from the mitzvah of tzitzit because it's a positive time-bound commandment. And yet, if she had a four-quartered garment that would sometimes be shared with her husband, it would have tzitzit on it. And she would be obligated to keep the tzitzit on it. And she'd be obligated to keep the tzitzit on it so that it would be ready for him when he needed to borrow it. That means that when he was not borrowing it, she would go out in this four-cornered garment and it would have on it tzitzit. Right? Rav Yehuda ben Bava is telling us women would wear four-cornered garments that had tzitzit on them when they were married, and their husbands would sometimes share those garments. At the same time, they'd wear other four-cornered garments that wouldn't, because the women would be exempt. But it was not considered, apparently, wildly inappropriate for a woman to wear tzitzit at this stage in Jewish history. Okay, so we saw two opinions, and we saw an interesting corollary to the second opinion. First opinion was, women are obligated. Second opinion was, women are exempt, positive time-bound commandment. Still have to explain that. Corollary. But still, when the woman has a four-cornered garment shared with her husband, it has to have tzitzit on it, which means that women would often be going out in garments that had tzitzit on them. Okay, so what makes this positive and time-bound? Well, the Tosefta tells us that it's positive and time-bound, but it doesn't tell us why. There's a Gemara that tells us, again, similar to what we saw in the Sifrei, a first opinion. Tanu Rabbanan, Hakol Chayavin B'Tzitzit. Kohanim, Levim, Yisraelim, Gerim, Nashim, V'Avadim. A first opinion that women are obligated in Tzitzit. And then again, Rabbi Shimon, who says, Poter B'Nashim Mipnei Shemitzvat Aseh Shezman Gramah. V'chol Mitzvat Aseh Shezman Gramah. Nashim Turot. And finally, we get the answer. Benashim Mai Taima to Rabbi Shimon. Why does Rabbi Shimon think that women are exempt, that it's positive and time-bound? Answer, Titania, as we learn in a Braita, Uritem Otam, Prat B'Chsut Laila. It says in the Parsha of Tzitzit that you have to see them. And that excludes, now here's a tricky question, that excludes Chsut Laila, a night garment. Now, there's a disagreement among the halachic authorities what night garment means here. Rambam says that a night garment here means any garment that you wear at night. In other words, tzitzit is only obligatory during the day and not at night. Therefore, it's time bound. That's relatively straightforward. Tosfot have a kind of different look at it. And they say that the difference is it like a garment that you'd only wear at night, like a pajama type garment, or maybe some special warm or reflective garment just for wearing at night? Or is it a garment that you would wear during the day? So for Tosfot, there is a mitzvah actually to have four-cornered garments at night. If you wore it all day and didn't take it off at night, it still needs to have tzitzit on it, according to Tosfot. Whereas according to Rambam, it's really just a clear-cut matter of time. Okay, Rambam's view is more straightforward. If tzitzit are only obligatory during the day because uritem otam, you can see during the day, then that gives us a way to understand the Gemara and Rabbi Shimon saying that they're time-bound and therefore that women would be exempt. Now, based on everything we've said, though, especially that last line in the Sifra that talked about men and women sharing four-cornered garments and the women going out with them and having the tzitzis on them, so that they'd be ready for their husbands when they'd wear them. There's no indication in anything we've seen so far that a woman couldn't do this, that a woman couldn't wear tzitzit when it would suit her. Back to the changing in how we relate to tzitzit, already implicit in some of the things we've seen is that it wasn't originally a ritual garment, right? Originally, tzitzit were the fringe. Tzitzit means fringes. Tzitzit was the fringe attached to the four-cornered garment you happen to be wearing. Tzitzit were not an inherently ritual garment that you wore only in order to fulfill the mitzvah. Later on, when people started finding excuses like Rav Katina, we develop a ritual garment to make sure that people have the opportunity to fulfill the mitzvah of tzitzit. But tzitzit originally are really just a regular form of clothing. And in this case, not a particularly shaped or styled form of clothing, a four-cornered garment. That's something that one would think a man could wear or a woman could wear. And in fact, we have some accounts in the Gemara of just that happening. Now, the first one is Rav Avram's Chasida. Rav Amram Chasida, Rama Tchilta Lepirza Madan Shibite. Rav Amram Chasida put Tchilet on his wife's apron. The question is, why is he putting Tchilet on her apron, i.e., why is he putting tzitzit on her apron? It's hers. So you could see it in different ways. Rashi says, De Kasavar Laila's Man Tzitzitu. He thinks a Ritem Otam excludes a blind man, has nothing to do with day and night. Avatsut Laila Chayav, and therefore it's not Zman Grama. So Rav Amram Chasida, the opinion of the Tanakhama, survives into the era of the Amoraim, that women are obligated. The Ran suggests that, well, maybe it's more of a Midat Chasidut. Maybe it's more, he wanted to be stringent and give her the opportunity to fulfill the mitzvah. But still what we're seeing is it was not unheard of for a woman to wear clothing with tzitzit attached. How did it really become unheard of? When did that happen? So part of the story is what we've started to talk about, which is about how the garment to which we attach ritual fringes becomes over time a ritual garment. And here we need to look at another verse and another halachic issue. And that's going to start filling out the story for us. And I think this halachic issue, if we're honest about it, also speaks to part of the visceral reaction that some of you might have had when I asked, what do you think of when you envision a woman with a talis on? And that is the sense that, well, it's like cross-dressing. So there's a halacha of cross-dressing, and the question is, does this really have something to do with tzitzit? Is that the reason why, unlike, let's say, something like we were talking about last week, saying Kriyat Shema, right? Saying the whole thing of Kriyat Shema. No one says that a woman can't say all of Kriyat Shema. There's some discussion about how the brachas work depending on what community she comes from. But voluntary mitzvah performance, shaking lulav, generally speaking, we embrace, and yet tzitzit, we don't. Lo yeh kli gever al isha, v'lo yobash gever simlat isha, ki to'avat Hashem Elokecha kol oseila. Okay, a man's article, kli gever, should not be on a woman. Now, man's article, usually we might think would mean something, would be there to include not just his clothing, but also some of his, let's say, his equipment. Like, let's say he has a sword. Swords used to be worn in fancy scabbards. They were, in some sense, also part of the decoration that a man would wear, right? Kli gever, a woman's not supposed to have a man's garment, but not just garment, a man's article. The Targum Yerushalmi does something very interesting with this phrase. It says, Lo yeh gulian de tzitzit utfilin, dehinun tikune gever alita. It introduces into the Targum here an interpretation, which is that tzitzit, along with tfilin, for a woman to have them on would be a violation of kli gever. Now, let's stop for a second and let's recognize many of the sources we've seen so far cannot line up with this Targum, at least not easily. It's not an easy fit. It's hard to see how Tanakama, who thinks that women are obligated, would think that it would also be a Torah level prohibition of Klegever, unless we're saying that it's the obligation in his mind pushes away the prohibition. It's very complicated. How could you see it as Klegever? Rav Amram, who's putting the tzitzis on his wife's apron, the opinion in the Sifri that's talking about women having to have tzitzit on the garments they share with their husbands so that their husbands have tzitzit on the garments, it's very hard to say that those sources think there's a Torah level prohibition of a woman having tzitzit out of a concern for cross-dressing, because how they couldn't have permitted these things, one would think otherwise. So it's a little confusing. And yet, like I was saying before, there's something instinctive about this also. The question is, you know, really, what do we do with this? Is this accepted to halacha? Ben Ish Chai, and this is pretty interesting, Ben Ish Chai gives another little bit of an interpretation. I'm not even going to read it inside. He quotes the Sefer Kavanot by the Ari. He says it has to do with Kabbalah. It's not a woman's garment for Kabbalistic reasons. Now, I asked a friend of mine, Dr. Tzvi Leshem, who has a doctorate in Kabbalah, and he consulted with a professor, Professor Menachem Kalis, to try and understand what this was, because I was trying to read up on it. It has something to do with the Kabbalistic feminine, which is not the same thing as a woman or a female, but it's a Kabbalistic concept. In Kabbalah, everyone is some mix of the Nukba and the Dukhra, of the masculine and feminine. The Kabbalistic feminine apparently emanates from lower down on the body than where the tzitzit sit on the shoulder and the chest. So there's some idea that there's Kabbalistically, this is inherently a male garment. It might have something more to do with, on some level, what happens after men become more and more the exclusive wearers of the garment. Because the laws of Kli Gever define Kli Gever as what in a given society is considered to be a male garment. So for example, this might be changing in some parts, but one might, maybe not in New York, but let's say in, I could be wrong about this also, but let's say in some kind of quiet Midwestern town, a skirt would likely still be considered to be a female garment, right? Whereas in Scotland, you know, the kilt is considered a male garment. And according to halacha, both of those things are kosher, because the definition of Kli Gever and Beged Isha depends on the gender dress conventions of a specific locale. So there's kind of an interesting chicken and the egg thing going on here, where maybe it happens that after men over time are starting to be the exclusive wearers of garments with tzitzit attached, maybe that becomes defined as a male garment. The thing that's hard there is what we saw before. We're talking about a four-cornered garment that happens to have fringes on. The fringe is the thing, right? Not the four corners itself. In our communities, think about it. Women wear pashmina scarves, and they often wear them over their shoulders, wrapping their bodies, much as a man would wear a tallis, just not with the specific folds that are popular in shul for men with the tallis. They might even have clips to keep them together. They're not necessarily cute little silver Torah-shaped clips to keep them together. But what makes this garment male? It's just defined as being a four-cornered garment. The essential thing are the fringes. So Rav Zalman Nechemiah Goldberg, Olav HaShalom, clearly struggled with this question, and he tried to say that maybe the p'tilei ha-tzitzit atzmam yesh makom lo osram le'isha mishum lo yeh kli gever. He wanted to suggest that the fringes themselves are defined halachically as kli gever and prohibited to the women. But then he admits, umnam ein zeh eser berur. Well, it's not 100% clear. So, but the tallis, that's clear. Talit Pashut Shasur. Now, when he says Talit, I think what he's talking about when he says Talit is what we think of. The first image that pops in our mind with our Talit, generally speaking, right? It's big, it's white, it's got the fringes attached. Often it has a couple of black stripes. Maybe it has a blue stripes. A few people have some things that are a little bit more comfortable, but it conforms to a certain style. And he's saying that specific ritual garment, at least when it's got the fringes attached, is considered male. Back to your picture, when I asked you to think about, to picture a woman in a talis, when you picture a woman in the talis, how much of you, of your mental image was the garment? And how much of your mental image was the fringes? Right? How much of the visceral reaction is about the fact that it's a specific garment we're used to seeing? What if a woman were wearing, just a mental thought experiment, right? A woman is wearing a pale pastel pashmina shawl. Picture a woman doing that. And it happens to have on each corner tzitzit. Would you react to it the same way? Would it have the same effect? Does it matter with respect to the question of kli gever? Well, Rav Moshe Feinstein thinks that maybe it does. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a very interesting tshuva about feminism in general. And there's one little pocket of it where he's talking theoretically, and he says, "Gama tzitzit shayach liisha shetirtzeh lilbosh beged shiyeh b'tzura acheret mibigdei anashim." He's saying tzitzit, even a woman could in theory take on. He's not cheerleading here. Let's not get carried away. But he's saying in theory, a woman could in a kosher way take on the mitzvah of tzitzit if she does it wearing a garment which is in a tzura acheret mibigdei anashim, which is clearly not some sort of male-coded garment. But still got to have four corners, of course. He says that it's at least theoretically possible that he could envision that it would be okay for a woman to voluntarily fulfill the mitzvah tzitzit, so long as what she's got on is something that's not that mental image of a talis, but it's something that's a feminine four-cornered garment, and it happens, and it has four tzitzit attached. Again, he's not applauding this, but he's suggesting it as a possibility. Ooh, I see time is running short. A couple more points, and I want to leave some time for questions. Okay. There's an important comment by the Bach on the tour, Rav Yoel Sirkis, 16th century on the tour, where he says that, you know, kli gever is not an issue when a woman is wearing a male garment in order to protect her from the elements. So let's say it's freezing cold and the only thing a woman has available to keep her legs warm is a pair of pants and she needs to go outside. So the Rav Yoel Sirkis doesn't have any issue with that. Or you would say that that's, let me put it more clearly, I'm sorry, he wouldn't say that that's an issue of kli gever. What about if someone wears something for the purpose of fulfilling a mitzvah? Okay. The Sri Leish suggests that maybe that's not klidever either. Mekevan shemitkavenet l'shem mitzvah en kanisur lo yobash. Okay, he wants to suggest that maybe if a woman's intention of wearing something is for the sake of mitzvah, maybe that also takes away the issue of klidever. Not everyone agrees with him. The Bach himself, when it comes to talking about like cross-dressing costumes on Purim, doesn't go for this. Bach himself says that when it comes to cross-dressing costumes on Purim, it's not enough to justify kli gever. Kli gever for a reason is linatzel minatzar, to really protect yourself from being afflicted by the elements. Okay, he's saying it's much more restricted permission. It's an interesting line of argument, but it's also picked up by Rav Henkin. And this is really where a lot of the discussion comes up. This question of, is it a male garment? And the question of, can it be feminized? Rav Henkin wants to say that it could be, along the lines of Rav Moshe. L'dati yechola lebosh tzitzit b'tzina, o mitachat lebgadayich, kidei shelo yachshidu bach b'kavanah lidamot l'anashim. If we're worried about kli gever, And if one of the ways we define Kli Gever has to do with intentionality, and if the intentionality that's particularly problematic is intentionality to look like men, then he says, I got another solution for you. Not a quote unquote feminized talis. He says, my other solution for you is like this. Wear tzitzis under your clothes. Why? You wear tzitzis under your clothes. People aren't going to think that you're trying to resemble a man. They'll calm down. Back to the mental picture. Now, this one's, I think, might be a little trickier, but it's an interesting picture. How would you react to seeing a woman walking around looking regular, but there's tzitzit hanging out? Another mental picture, though. How would you react to a woman walking around looking regular and nothing is hanging out? And someone told you later, oh, she's wearing tzitzit. It's interesting, right? The different gradations of what it feels like. And in a sense, I think we almost see those intuitive feelings being expressed here in halachic language. It's as though that innate sense of discomfort, which comes from a concern in part about boundary crossing. This mitzvah has been in the provenance of men, and women can't voluntarily take it on because it would be boundary crossing. So the halachic expression of that becomes the discussion of Kli Gever, even though there's early sources that don't seem to be concerned about a Kli Gever issue. And that's plausible because, really, over time, the four-cornered garment that happens to have tzitzit has become that ritualized garment. Right, that has its own very clear ritual look to it. And that is de facto understood, at least now, as a male garment when we look at it. But as Rav Moshe Feinstein pointed out, that doesn't, unless we say the fringes themselves are Kli Gever, that doesn't necessarily preclude the possibility that a woman could have a feminine four-cornered garment with tzitzit on them and stay on the right side of this particular halachic issue. Okay. So I want to summarize what we talked about so far today. And I want to tell you about a little bit what we're going to do next time. And I want to open the floor to questions. So what did we do today? We looked at the psukim about tzitzit, and we saw the great significance of the mitzvah. And we saw that there are different views about whether or not women are obligated. Halacha picks up the view of Rabbi Shimon, which is that tzitzit are mitzvot aseh she'zman germa, and therefore women are exempt from the mitzvah of tzitzit, a positive time-bound mitzvah from which women are exempt. And yet we have plenty of examples of positive time-bound mitzvot from which women are exempt that women nevertheless perform. And tzitzit isn't one of them on the whole. And one reason for that, which is what we explored tonight, was the possibility that tzitzit would be considered Kli Gever. Exactly how that works in a technical level is interesting, in particular because it might be possible to say that intention to wear what might be called Kli Gever for the purpose of a mitzvah is different from intention to wear Kli Gever for the purpose of boundary crossing. And what's so interesting is that that whole discussion of Kli Gever gets into really that intuitive place. It starts touching on that intuitive place, which says, well, yeah, for a woman to shake a lulav is one thing, but for her to put on the talit intuitively feels like boundary crossing. So the halachic expression of that, in a sense, is the Kli Gever discussion. If that were the only issue involved, there might, in fact, be solutions for women to wear tzitzit based on what we've read. Perhaps along the lines of Rav Moshe, she could subtly have tzitzit attached to something, a type of garment a woman might wear otherwise. Or perhaps, like Rav Henkin suggests, she could wear tzitzit under her clothing and no one would be the wiser. And there is an opinion that even wearing clothing in private is an issue of Kli Gever. It's on the Makorot sheet, Mincha Yitzchak. But according to that view, those would be two possibilities. What we're going to see next week is the other issue that gets raised by halachic authorities with respect to women in tzitzit, so that can't be the whole end of the story. Okay, Let's open this up to questions. I'm sure there's been a lot of stuff coming in the chat. Jay, you want to help me work through?
You want me to help you navigate the question? That means I can add in my editorial comments. See, if you do
Yeah, I
them on
know. It's
your
going to make
own.
it much more entertaining for
Oh, much
everybody,
more
I'm sure.
entertaining the answer. Okay, let's start at the beginning. Fine. Okay, just people were talking when you asked about the feeling to say something you don't sell. So there was, I'm just a pull back and forth. You know, we say korbanot, although I would say that is very different because korbanot is not something that applies to half the people now. It applies to everybody when it applies. It just doesn't apply now. That's different than mitzvah, that half and half. So I'll comment on that one. Other things, okay, that was just interesting how people feel. That was interesting how you framed it. Okay, let's see.
Yeah, but by the way, I think that's true. It was just interesting that Dafka, the male on our staff, the rabbi on our staff, Ravik said, "Why are you women not
Right.
outraged that you're always that you're spending so much time talking about a mitzvah that you don't do?" And the women on the staff said, "What are you talking about? We do this. It's not a problem. That's
Because
okay."
maybe because our society has trained women to think that way, perhaps, you know.
We're used to talking about things, whether or not we participate in them, right? Like,
Listen, even
it's like
Talmud
the women going
Torah.
to the movies with the male protagonists and the men not
Hey,
going to the movies
listen.
with the female
Right
protagonists.
now, we've only scheduled, 13 weeks and like six topics. There are about 60 other topics that we haven't scheduled. Woman and Talmud Torah, this can be 130
I will
weeks.
be happy to do as many as
Okay,
well. Let's see what else we got
one
here.
thing at a time. Yeah. So, but it is interesting, right? It is interesting, right? Some people are totally not bothered by that, and some are. Okay, Zahavi, let me see if I understand this question. Why do we say that forever? For the Dorot refers, I assume that's not referees, only to the fringes. It doesn't include the four-cornered normative garment. Well, I'm not sure I understand. After all,
I think
some
I
has.
understand the question.
Okay.
It's really interesting. I haven't seen anyone suggest that it's, I think, because the verb is really the thrust of the verse is saying that the mitzvah is really having the tzitzit there. So the idea is if we're talking about the mitzvah being for the generations, you would assume it's talking about the mitzvah, the center of the mitzvah, which is the fringes and not that one wears this type of garment. Because according to technically one doesn't have to wear that type of garment to start with. At least that's how it's understood. Okay. I hope I
All right,
wasn't
Alan's
too.
pointing out that, right, the husband wearing the garment, this was before you started the whole issue, obviously doesn't concern on cross-dressing, and I'll add in my comment that, of course, that can change again. It could be for 1800 years it was considered a male garment, and maybe 50 years from now it will be considered not a male garment, like you say, the kilt in Scotland. So that's the Klieg-Ebert argument,
Oh,
even if
wait,
you accept it.
I'll add also that there's unisex clothing, right? So my assumption is that would have been like the first unisex clothing. Like you have a, I mean, it's basically it's kind of like a small blanket. You know what I mean? You've got a big piece of cloth that you call a garment. He's wearing it, she's wearing it. You know, unless I don't know what it would have to be, lace and feathers before he wouldn't want to wear it. You know, if it's just basically a wool woven square, so it happens to be usually hers, but he needs to run out. Sounds pretty unisex, I think.
Okay, right. That's interesting. Okay, somebody asking, Diane asking, what about blind people, ritemoto? That's a topic if you want to That's, I don't even remember the whole issue. There isn't, if I'm not aware that there's a exemption for blind people to wear tzitzit, but I just don't recall. I don't know if you remember.
Maggie and Avram seem to glance at it, but I don't know the
In
whole process.
general, there's a whole debate about blind people in Mitzvot Aseh, but that's okay. For another time, maybe we can get back to that in a future time. Garments, Diane's also asking, garment sounds like a rectangular piece of woolen clothing with a hole in the head. Okay, that's what we're discussing, different types of clothing. Okay, does the wearing of this outer garment in the times of Chazal with fringes mean that the fringes were dirty most of the time because they dragged on the ground? Or does the short fringe of your own family's heirloom tell us a remnant of this issue not to drag on the ground to get dirty? There is no.
I have no
On,
idea.
Lori.
I have no idea, but you know what? I bet that they had, you know, the same way that, you know, the men fold the tallis shawl, you know, and they figured it out.
Although, according to the Talmud, tashmishei mitzvah nizrakin, as the Talmud. In other words, there is no intrinsic holiness to the tzitzit. The Gemara distinguishes, for example, tefillin, which is our in 2 weeks, which has actual holiness, to tzitzit, which is a string that we imbue it with holiness. And the Gemara says that tashmishei mitzvah nizrakin, theoretically, your lulav and etrog, your tzitzit, you can throw in the garbage. Maybe it's not so nice, wrap it up. But so I don't, and I think, technically speaking, you take your Talmud. goes into the washroom. People don't do it. It's respectful. But so I don't know that getting dirty would really be a halachic issue. Anyways, okay, I told you I'd add in my editorial comments. Did these different approaches exist at the same time? How did the rabbis line up time-wise? Okay, yeah, so that's Laurie already said no, they don't all line up. But and if you want to discuss the historical, you were discussing you know, historical time development of this.
But when we have, I mean, like when we're looking at, let's say, the Sifri, and it's bringing different opinions, those opinions presumably are basically in the same era. In other words, there was a period of time in which this was a matter of disagreement. Fascinatingly, the disagreement appears to have persisted, at least according to some commentaries on the Rav Amram Chasida passage. The disagreement appears to have persisted among some Rabbanim into the Amoraic era, even as Rabbi Shimon's exemption becomes more widespread and accepted. There's still some people going with the minority opinion, but at some point that really fades away.
Okay, good. That happens in all areas of halacha. Eventually a consensus develops. Okay, just commenting, and again, I think this is beyond, especially for now, Kabbalah, using Kabbalah in halachic issues. Just that's an important issue, but we're going to have to leave it, I think, for another time. If the fringing cells are kli gever, does that mean only men can produce them? That's also a debate within the halachic, you know, sources that you alluded to, the Ber Bnei Israel, maybe with the making of the tzitzit. Good. You can usually know tzitzit garment under clothing. Okay, would it make a difference? You would notice that the woman is wearing tzitzit. Does Rav Henkin address that issue? Yeah. That she has to wear dark clothing so you can't see the tzitzit.
I don't think he says anything like that. I don't know how perceptive people are with that. I also think, you know, it might depend on how fitted the clothing is. Honestly, and we'll talk more about this next time, I think one of the reasons why that doesn't happen more, next week we'll talk about another halachic factor, but I think one of the reasons it doesn't happen more that women wear a talit katan under their clothing, which might skirt or might answer some of the halachic concerns and enable fulfillment of the mitzvah, is honestly that they wouldn't like how their clothing would look with the thing on top. And it was like, I think it's also a practical hesitation for some people about that, which is just kind of, I mean, it's just interesting.
Can mute yourself. We'll allow people afterwards if they want to speak early, but if everyone can mute now, please. Okay. David Eisen, who wants to know, I think if I quickly reading through the connection, maybe tzitzis got sort of tied into tefillin relating to the Big Day Kahuna. And that would explain, I think you're saying that would explain why there was a sort of a turn against women wearing the tzitzit, right? David, is that what you're saying?
It's interesting, though. Correct. The linkage with the Big Day Kahuna to those things is, because I think part of that is just about how it's kind of hard to understand, right? You know, we think of Jewish ritual as being done with tzitzis and tefillin, and the Big Day Kahuna don't include them. It's a little confusing. And I think that those analogs are helping us understand that. Are they also working in the other way to make women feel more, to make everyone feel that tzitzit are less? I don't know. I think it's probably strong enough just seeing that the men are in practice wearing talis and tzitzis and the women aren't. But it's possible that it adds something in the collective imagination. It's interesting.
Okay, Ruth pointing out, right, we haven't gotten the whole issue of Tchelet. I'm not sure if you're planning to discuss the rediscovery of Tchelet, and I assume you're not so much going to plan to discuss that.
That's not so much our topic, but, you know, right. it really is fascinating. You can fulfill the mitzvah of tzitzit without Tchelet. So that's why, you know, even if we agree that, even if someone holds that Tchelet has been discovered, it's not that the people who are not wearing Tchelet are not fulfilling the mitzvah. The ideal is to use tchelet, which is why there are, you know, the people who have adopted it when it's come available. It's a fascinating, wondrous thing that this really might have been rediscovered, but it kind of leaves women neither here nor there anyway at this stage, right? You know, I guess if a woman were to come to the conclusion that she were wearing tzitzit, she might want to do it with tchelet, but I don't know that her consideration in that sense would be any different. And we still have to learn about why that doesn't happen, why halacha has other reservations about women wearing tzitzit.
I will add, you may be expressing the opinion of many people, but Rav Hershel Schechter, of course, the Rosh Kol of YU, does not agree with that. And he has, I think he is in the minority, but he holds that you're not allowed to wear tzitzis day without tchelet. That since we've discovered tchelet, it would be bal tigra, you would be taking away from the mitzvah. Wow. So he holds it's better. And I've being a student of his for, you know, I only wear tchelet in my tzitzis. So that's his opinion. I'm obviously many people disagree with that, but that is I do want to point out an interesting halachic opinion. I'll also point out the discovery of tchelet and the return to the land of Israel, I think are not, it's not a coincidence. These two rediscovered mitzvot, if we can say, in a sense, in our time. And it's both those mitzvot, which are the ones that Chazal say, if you observe this mitzvah, living in Eretz Yisrael and wearing tzitzit, are shkula keneged kol mitzvot. So there's probably a deeper connection between the tchelet, the rediscovered tchelet, and the return to Israel, but that's for another time. Okay. Ruth does feel strange wrapping yourself without tzitzit. Ah, it feels wrong. Like I should be attaching the string and I'm, like, okay, that's very interesting. Okay. All right. Arthur, what does it cost to make a piece of wool cloth or given size compared to another given point in time? I don't know that economics has anything to do with any of this. I assume that's what you're asking, Arthur.
It almost has to do with it. That's probably why the one that she talked about at the beginning was smaller, because it cost a lot.
Right, but I don't think that has to do with men, women. I don't think so, but
It might have had to do with unisex clothing. In other words, why would the husband and wife be sharing? Perhaps because things were more scarce at that point in time. There was more poverty. It certainly could have something to do with why the sizes would be smaller, and it also might be that we inflate the sizes in time of plenty. It's all possible, but there's more to it than that. I want to just quickly address Ruth's comment, which I think was important, which is that It can be an interesting thing for someone. A woman can have, I've heard this from a few women who feel a little strange when they're wearing a four-cornered garment at shul, because the air conditioning often seems to be particularly strong in the woman's section. And there are no tzitzit on them. We're going to talk about that aspect of things a little bit more next week when we discuss some of the other halachic issues involved.
Okay.
I'm going out of order, but it's just really important to me that as many people hear this as possible. Rabik was not saying that women shouldn't say Vayomer with Shema. Chas v'shalom, that wasn't his suggestion. He was saying that he was surprised that we weren't addressing how does a woman feel talking about a mitzvah that she's not performing. He wasn't saying don't say it. And we did, in fact, talk about Abrit Chashik Tam Tabib Sarenu in our piece on Birkat HaMazon. Okay, I'm sorry, I skipped.
But No. I that's fine. Vakashai. So you could do the whole thing. But just fair. Yeah, we don't have that much left. We'll wrap up in a couple minutes. Okay, if Retem is the goal, that is a general question. Do you have to wear them outside or not? Should you have your tzitzit showing? And certain people say no, it's arrogance. And certain people say yes. So Retem means, if we're interpreting Retem means to the day and not at night, then it doesn't mean you literally have to see them and you can tuck them in halachically. But that they're different opinions whether you should wear your tzitzis in or out. Chaya wants to know how widespread is it widespread at all of women wearing tzitzit, right? It is pretty rare. You don't see it so often in shul that a woman wears a talit. Do you know, Lori, if this is caught on?
We're going to talk about this. Actually, I want to talk about this a little bit more next time.
Okay, we can leave it.
One of the things about a woman doing something under her garments that would be undetectable is that, right, we wouldn't know. It's the kind of thing that would be very hard to document. So it's the kind of adds to the question here about what's being done.
Okay, put up to tell you only do so for tefillah. Interesting. Ellen pointing out that the woman who do in the New York area who do put on a talit, a feminine looking talit, do so only for tefillah, very much so making it into a ritual garment as to just happen to wear a garment with four corners. Okay, I know. Ecuadorian women wear those, I forget how to pronounce that word. How to pronounce that word? Serapis, whatever, big blankets with four corners. Okay. And theoretically, if a woman be obligated tzitzit, you'd have to put tzitzit on it. Yeah. The underlying assumption here, there are only two genders. Oh, okay. That's a whole other question.
Chazal also are aware that there's more than
correct.
Two genders. Chazal talks about some very interesting intersex categories. They talk about different types of phenomena. They're aware of them. Yes, to really discuss Klee-Gerber properly on its own terms is to unpack the whole question of gender. And that's, we were doing it really with a specific application. But yes, Klee-Gerber is making an assumption that the primary genders we're talking about are male and female. Usually with respect to Klee-Gerber, I think that in the intermediate categories in halacha are usually treated as males in terms of clothing with Klee-Gerber, for Klee-Gerber purposes.
Okay, Diane pointing out she knows of people who actually just wear the talis at home. Very interesting. I don't know of too many people who wear talis. I am curious if it's, I think it's something that's caught on a little bit less than some of the other practices. But okay, very interesting. I don't know about this idea that women like cooler temperatures than men. That's sort of interesting. I don't know. Depends on the movements. Come a new ritual for conservative groups to receive a talis. Well, that's more on the tefillin. I imagine that will come up with the whole controversy a few years ago with SAR, and there was two girls from a conservative background who were wearing tefillin, and so it was natural. It wasn't the feminist statement. Okay. The tumtum, I think you'll address that. You'll see, I don't know, Laura, you want to address that next week or not at all?
I think we're going to leave it out for now. But like, my understanding, it usually goes in the Klee-Gerber category when there's a question about the gender. So it's just who knows. So like I said, there's plenty more to discuss. That was part one. Really hope you'll come back for part two, because otherwise you're really not getting the whole story.
That's it. You're only allowed to come to part one if you come to part two. That's okay.
That's
a little harsh.
You talk about something sensitive, you know, the great fear is that people aren't going to be there to see what you're really saying.
All right. Yasha Koch, I really do. I do really appreciate how sensitively you talk on the sensitive subjects, you know, addressing them honestly and openly and the range of opinions. And I think everybody here, I know I appreciate that. So it's a pleasure to, you know, address it. And these obviously, you're right. And how do people feel? You're right. People have strong reactions. It probably isn't so right. Let's examine the sources. It's, you know, things we'll pick up next week. We look forward to seeing everybody next week. This evening, of course, Torah Motion has on the same Zoom channel our weekly class, Moshe Sokolov, Dr. Moshe Sokolov, on the Haftarah of the week. Everybody's welcome. And then tomorrow, invite your friends. And then tomorrow night, Rabbi Michael Whitman from Montreal will be giving our weekly Parsha Shavuot. You know him. You know,
he was, he wouldn't remember me, but many years ago, I knew him.
Okay. Can I say hello? Can I say hello?
He won't remember me, though, so it's okay.
I bet you he will.
Anyway.
Okay. All right. Nice to see everybody. We look forward to learning with you soon. Have a great day. Be well, and invite your friends to come and join in. Thank you very much.
Yeah, please. We would love to have more people in the show. Okay. Thank you so much, everybody. Great pleasure.
Ayla Tov and Efrat. Okay. It's getting late.
Yeah. Take care.
It's okay. All right.